This episode is brought to you by SD Sober Living. If you or someone you know needs a safe and supportive recovery home, then reach out to SD Sober Living at www.sdsoberliving.org or call 619-625-0769. That's 619-625-0769. Come get some San Diego recovery and some fuck fentanyl at SD Sober Living. Welcome to the Fuck Fentanyl Podcast. I'm Luis Romero. I am the Fuck Fentanyl guy. Today, I got a really cool guest. It's Chris Grasso, yeah. Author of, he just told me, 5 books, which is fucking insane.
Written a few.
And I got one of them right here called Necessary Death.
Yeah.
So, you want, before we get started with you, do you want to just talk a little bit about Necessary Death?
Sure. Yeah, that's my 4th book. And
wow, so awesome.
Yeah, thanks, dude. It was really cool that it came out on Halloween of last year, my favorite holiday.
Wow, really?
Yeah, the publishing dates are Tuesdays, and it just coincided.
Yeah.
And it was perfect for this book because what we do, I have a wonderful co-author, his name is Preston Fussell.
Mm-hmm.
And we both write for Fangoria Horror Magazine, which mm-hmm. that in and of itself is a trip to me because I've been reading that since I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's like the premier horror magazine, and mm-hmm. and I didn't know that they would like the stuff I was pitching them, but it actually went over really well, and that's the inspiration for this book. So what I was doing was I was taking horror movies and relating them to mental health topics. Like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, for
yes.
example, great film.
Yeah,
but I explored Classic. The various masks in which we wear throughout our days, you know. And so a little
the mask made out of flesh.
Yeah, those too. But no, you know, like the different masks, like the employer mask or employee mask,
gotcha.
The mom, dad mask, the friend mask, and you know, the myriad number of masks we wear, and how many of them are actually really necessary, and how many of them are because we're afraid to show our true selves in the world. So yeah, it's kind of tongue in cheek.
Gotcha.
But I did that with a few articles and they did really well. And I knew though my limitations, I'm a horror fan, but I'm since a kid, my favorite genre, but I'm not a full on aficionado.
I see.
But my co-author Preston absolutely is.
And
he's
okay.
brilliant. Like I was telling you a moment ago, he has a degree in psychology.
Wow.
He's written several amazing fiction books that mm-hmm. I absolutely loved. So I had him on my podcast, and afterwards I'm like, dude, I'm writing this book, and it's it's kind of like the little book that could, and
yeah,
and he loved the idea. So yeah, man, we wrote it. It literally took 5 years to get published, which
wow,
yeah, started it in 2018, just came out last year.
Okay,
but yeah, each chapter, man, it just takes a different iconic like horror character or horror movie, and explores that through the guise of different mental health topics.
I see.
So Jason Voorhees is a chapter.
Yeah, yeah.
And we look at childhood trauma in relation to
yeah.
you know, Voorhees drawn
yeah,
to
yeah,
camp.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And then he becomes his maniacal killer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, man, like we do that. And what else? I mean, chapter on Michael Myers and Halloween.
Michael Myers, that's
and,
a good one.
Yeah, he's my favorite.
Yeah.
And that's in relation to Carl Jung and the shadow self and looking at things like that. And then we have some silly ones like Jaws, Bruce the Shark. And like,
Jaws was a fucking, a terrifying fucking.
Absolutely. But the approach was tongue-in-cheek where it's like, take bite-sized, like, little chunks out of your goals, you know, like, make
gotcha,
them manageable.
Gotcha.
So, you know, like, we had to have fun with it. But yeah, dude, it's doing better than I thought, to be honest. I didn't expect it to really sell many copies. But
right,
we had a cool publisher, HCI, take it on, and they did a great job. With it, and I'm super psyched on it. So
yeah, man, awesome.
Thanks,
man.
Dude.
Yeah. Well, all right, man. So I just kind of wanted to, you know, touch base where you're at in your recovery, man. Mm-hmm. And also just a little bit of your backstory. I'm very interested in hearing.
Yeah. So this year marks 20 years that I came into the rooms. I'm not 20 years sober, but it was 20 years ago.
It doesn't work out that way a lot.
I'm not the one-hit wonder. I know some people that are, and I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I salute them.
Yeah, I do too. But no, my path has been filled with a lot of hiccups and pitfalls. But I've been very fortunate that the majority of those 20 years I have been sober. I've had multiple years on several occasions. Mm-hmm. But the classic story of often negating meetings, taking my will back, like, you know, not staying in touch with my community, trying to do it myself.
So it's a classic pitfall.
Of course. So, you know, that was then. And I can just fast forward to more recently. I was in Connecticut in West Hartford. COVID had hit. Mm-hmm. My then fiance and I were getting divorced separated. Because I'd relapsed, and I ended up in the psych hospital twice over the course of a 3-month period, Yukon Psychiatric. And I was there because I was very suicidal. I was drinking a handle of Tito's, at least a handle a day.
Oh, wow.
I was in my apartment. I had money in the bank. I had been self-employed to that point for like over 10 years through my writing, public speaking. Mm-hmm. So I had some money, but it was quickly dwindling. And it was horrible, man. I remember putting a large knife on my on the coffee table.
Yeah.
And the few times I would come to, I would see that knife and I would just contemplate suicide. Yeah. Something I tried twice when I was younger. There were more cries for help, but
sure.
You know, I tried. I ended up in psych hospitals then. I still have a lot of self-harm scars.
Mm-hmm.
But so I did that. I got scholarship to a program in Pennsylvania called Retreat, which it's a great idea, but not for people like me. It's like a college campus, dude. It's male, really? Female. People hooking up. And I'll be honest, I'd never done that. And I've been in a number of programs, but I was still so broken. I ended up hooking up with a girl a couple of times.
Really?
And that's a code that I had taken very seriously. But that's how empty I was.
Like, yeah.
And I remember.
Lost hope.
Yeah, totally. And I told my counselor there, she was a great counselor. I said, I'm really trying, but there's something inside of me. Like the spark is not there. I just feel hopeless.
Yeah.
And so I finished the program and I came back to my apartment in West Hartford. And within 5 minutes, I was at the liquor store and I was wasted. And that went on for another maybe 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Ambulance back at my apartment, back at the psych hospital. This time, I mean, I was done. I didn't get out of bed for 3 days. I didn't eat. They finally came in and they're like, you know, you have major depressive disorder. Not a surprise. I've been diagnosed with depression since a teen.
Yeah.
Then PTSD, complex PTSD. Okay, I didn't know about that. And your body is completely treatment resistant. I'd been taking Lexapro and Abilify and other things.
Yeah.
So they ended up, and this is super controversial, but I think these are conversations that are important to have.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me 3 rounds of oral ketamine.
Okay.
Saved my life.
Ketamine.
Oral ketamine.
Wow.
So I had been, you know, I went to school for addiction counseling. And I am a very open-minded human being. I have been reading studies for the last 8 years or so out of Columbia University, St. Johns Hopkins, about things like ketamine and psilocybin. And, you know, again, I know this is tricky and I want to be very careful when I talk about this because it can have horrible effects for people. People have borderline personality, people have bipolar, or people are just trying to do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also seen it literally save lives and change lives. And I'm one of them. My friend, her name's Cassie, she is the co-founder of the psychedelic research department at UCSD, also the co-founder of their mindfulness department. She was the president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which is in Silicon Valley.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was Edgar Mitchell. He was the 14th astronaut on the moon. That was his place.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And she brought me out there to speak right before COVID. And that was surreal because here's Deepak Chopra. Here's literally NASA physicists and like Irvin Laszlo and all of these crazy, brilliant people and me in like a Mobb Deep t-shirt or some shit. Just like, okay, I'm here. But I became very close with her and we've stayed in touch since. We actually were just together a couple of weeks ago because now she's down here full time.
Okay.
And, you know, she's talked about how psilocybin has been monumental. She's like 17 years sober.
Wow.
And there were times in her life where she did very formally ceremonies. And it wasn't just, I'm going to take a bunch of shrooms and get fucked up.
Yeah.
So anyways, that is part of my story. And, you know, today I do what I do. I'm sober. I never smoke cigarettes. I'm grateful for that. But like,
You never smoked a cigarette in your life?
No, I've had one. When I was tripping on acid, I had a menthol in Newport. I was like, yeah, dude.
That was like my first cigarette.
Yeah. Holy shit. I was like 19. No, I wasn't 19. I was like 17, 16. But Dude, I was the kind of addict alcoholic where cigarettes did not fuck me up. I needed to get fucked up right out of the beginning.
I see.
And yeah, my gateway was pot and then alcohol, but I fell in love with hallucinogenics. Like, I fell in love with them.
Really?
Yeah, I was fucking with those more than anything for a while.
Oh, no shit. What kind of hallucinogens?
Yeah, acid here? And mushrooms.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. Okay.
But then, you know, I moved up. This is around 2000, and I still haven't gone into any program yet. And mm-hmm. I'm living in the hood with my best friend, Mel.
Fuck yeah.
Literally. It was like we were the only white kids around. They called us the crazy crackers. We had to fight to get our like respect, but they did respect us finally.
Oh, right.
But it was, dude, we still don't know how we lived through that. We were in a band called the Phoenix Society. We were on the first floor of a 3-floor house.
Yeah.
People would just come in because we nicknamed it Crackton. They were literally sold crack right there. The gas station was across the street. And we indulged in that too. You go, you make 20 rounds a night, crack dealer.
Yeah.
Cross the street, get your little rose and a stem, get your tour boy. And I'm not trying to glorify this shit, sure, but it's just,
no, it's fine.
It is what it is, you know? Yeah, so,
exactly.
But there we were doing everything, like crack, meth, PCP, that's ketamine, right. Of course, like fentanyl, back when fentanyl was hard to get.
When it was a medical
yes, drug. Yeah. We had a friend who was he got a motorcycle accident. Yeah. So he would sell us the lollipop. So we knew what we were getting.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So when this whole thing started, I'm jumping around a little, but I worked for 7 or 8 years in Connecticut at a really cool place called Newport Academy with teenagers.
Okay.
And it's a residential program. They're ages 13 to 19. Mm-hmm. They're there for everything, not just addiction, but self-harm, suicide attempts.
Gotcha.
You know, eating disorders. Oh, okay, a lot of them were transgender and
okay.
figuring things out. And that was equal parts heartwarming and heartbreaking. You know, working with these teens, and you're in the field, man, so I know you get
yes.
this.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to work in the field to know this, but like, the burn marks up these girls' arms or like the legit suicide stories from the 13 or 14 year olds. It wasn't a cry for help. They were trying.
Yeah.
But I was there and it was cool. They were using my first two books as part of their curriculum, unbeknownst to me.
Seriously.
Yeah. And they were using another book called Noah Levine, who wrote the foreword for my book. He's a Buddhist in recovery. They were using Dharma Punks and Refuge wow. Recovery.
Wow.
And so the owner saw I lived in Connecticut, took me out to dinner, told me what they do. I went down and saw the campus, loved it. You know, they do equine therapy. I taught meditation. I would do music meditation, mindfulness, all sorts of like kind of out of the box things.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. You know, for 8 years I got to do that. But my point in sharing that was while I was there, that's when the fentanyl crisis started.
Oh,
and I remember a lot of the kids there.
In 2020 or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, I'd been there before this, but I remember it was somewhere in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. And I remember like it baffled me because my only relationship with fentanyl to that point was, again, the back lollipops. In like 2000, 2001, 2002, and the lollipops. And again, they weren't easy to get.
No, and, No, you got to have cancer. You had to
right.
be, like... you're pretty much you're writing out you're about to die.
Yes,
they'll give you that.
Exactly. So yeah, and that's why it was just a trip. It's like shit. Now it's not only is it readily available, it's in everything. Freaking weed. Like it's crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah. But I everything oxys. You name it. The only other thing I don't think I ever really did was I snorted heroin. I never injected it.
Uh-huh.
Yet, big yet, you know, it's one.
Oh, I don't cross that.
I
one
don't anticipate that, but dude, I realized in life they're all yets. Like, I didn't think
true
the
that.
End of the end of so right now, where I'm at, is I am 8 months. I just celebrated 8 months last week since I've had a
8 months.
That's a big fuck deal. Yeah, for me. Yeah,
like, hold on. Yeah.
I've had significantly longer time than that in the past, however, I don't think the quality. I've had this quality of recovery in my life. And, you know, that saying you hit the bottom and then the bottom gives out. I've done that. And then that bottom gave out and that one. And it's just like, how many bottoms are there? I mean, I've been
right.
in 2016, I think. I know your listeners can't see this, but I'm talking. I'll show you. I was, I ended up in the hospital because I literally drank myself essentially to death. I was not breathing. They had to intubate me. Yeah, you can see here, there was one tube breathing
holy
for me.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, there was...
Oh, my fucking God.
They put a second one in my stomach because they didn't know what I was incoherent I got there. And this is one more. And my mom took these pictures, man. Like,
oh,
she
my
had to
God,
see
dude. Yeah. You look like you're Yeah, you're about to check out.
I was not Jesus breathing on my Christ, own. And that's so why. Scary. So yeah, but even after that, dude, like I got sober for a while again, and then it got worse. It got worse than that.
Yeah.
And I'll just, again, I'll fast forward because I ended up in LA from Connecticut and down in San Diego. And I was trying, but it wasn't clicking.
Yeah.
And then, I went through a few programs and I was at a friend's house and they're in recovery and I was there for a couple of days and they're like, I can't have this here. And I'm like, I understand. So they kindly put me up in a hotel for 3 days.
Okay.
And another friend of mine in Vista, we were trying desperately to find a detox. As you know, it's not that easy a lot of the time.
No, they're always full. Yes. It's yeah.
Yeah. So I got to the point where I don't remember any of being in that hotel room for 3 days. I was just having alcohol delivered. And I think, I think that's all I had. But I woke up on the morning of that third day in the emergency room. I don't remember which one, to be honest, but I was naked under the hospital sheet. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I didn't have my glasses. They came in and they're like, yeah, you weren't in good shape last night. And anyways, they had to get me donation clothes from the hospital.
Really?
And then get a voucher for a cab to bring me back. I called the hotel.
Uh-huh.
I verified they had my wallet, they had my glasses, and they're like, yeah, dude, it's not cool. Come get your shit. So I go back, and the guy wasn't really mean, but you know, he heard what I needed to, or he said what I needed to hear. And
yeah,
he's like, dude, you soiled your bed last night. There was broken glass all over the floor, blood everywhere. Our maids, I had to tip them more. So I apologize. Oh, I know. I apologize. And that is one of the last amends I have left to make that I have not.
Oh, really?
Is I'm going to go back. And I told them I would, and I will pay, pay some money.
Yeah. That's
but,
awesome.
I was walking out and I was basically homeless. Oh, I should mention too, at this point, I was sick as hell.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting. It's 2 hours, they said, for the cab. So going into the hospital, there's these sliding doors.
Mm-hmm.
There's a security guard checking people in.
Yeah.
And couples are going in. Every time they would, they had the hand sanitizers that would dispense alcohol.
Oh, yeah, God. That's no. Where this I know where this is heading.
And I would go in and I would do 3 or 4 little things. And I'd walk out, make sure no one's looking. And I would start licking my hands. Yeah, dude. That's the bottom I hit. And I would. I was drinking mouthwash too.
That's like, so harmful, man. Like, yeah, you didn't horrible. Even salt him?
Nope. Just straight up, like.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah,
it was horrible, dude.
That happened in my first rehab. These guys, they drank the hand sanitizer, and they told me the trick is to put salt in it, and I guess I guess something like the gels, like the bacteria or something like that.
I don't have time for that. I need to get fucked up now.
Instant gratification.
Yeah, I'm not that chemist. No, but they're right. But it was, I share that. I can laugh at it now, but like, that's fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, and so I got back there and the guy told me, he said, and then I walked outside and another guy working there was very nice. He said, hey man, you're not in good shape. And I'm like, I know, but I'm trying to get help. And he said, I got to tell you a story. A couple of years ago, we had a guy in here and his girlfriend begged us not to take him, but we couldn't not, he wasn't causing any trouble.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, on the third morning, just like you, we found him, but he was dead.
Oh,
alcohol Jesus. Bottles everywhere. And I started crying and I'm like, dude, fuck. I know. I'm like, I don't want to die. And he's like, I hope you don't. I said, me too. And so I called my friend in Vista, and by nothing short of, for me, grace, whatever one cares to call their higher power.
Yeah.
A bed became available, tentatively available in Carlsbad at a place called the First Step House.
Oh, right.
They're
on.
AA based. And it worked for me because alcohol was my thing.
And it's kind of crazy. One of my previous guests, Summer, was actually at that.
Oh, okay.
First Step House detox. She was telling me about it.
Yeah, so they have a woman's one called, I think it's also First Step for Women.
Gotcha.
There's a few. Charlie Street. It's an incredible program, man. I mean, it's dangerous because you're detoxing non-medically. You're not taking any benzos.
Yeah.
The only reason I got my bed was because somebody had a seizure 3 nights before and he didn't come back. So I know. Here's the other way I fucked up. So I get there at like 10 in the morning and they do my initial intake. Everyone I saw come in thereafter came in wasted. I was not wasted. I blew a .00.
Uh-huh.
I'm sweating. Withdrawals are kicking in.
Yeah.
I'm in the back courtyard, and I have to wait till 4 for someone to come, but I can't leave the house the shift change, and they're going to check me in.
Okay.
And they're still like, you're probably in, but not 100%. I'm like,
yeah,
the fuck? So I end up getting in, but it was brutal all day. I'm just sweating and sick and I can't eat and I have nowhere to lay down and I hadn't really slept. But, you know, that is where everything started to change for me. You know, I found my connection with my higher power again back there in that courtyard sick. I found my sponsor on my second day there who I've had some great sponsors in my life, but this dude is like next level for me. No coincidence that he came into my life. Like that second day, he was taking some of us to a meeting. I think it was Buccaneer Park. It's an AA Ocean meeting here in Oceanside.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And and there was another guy there and he's an awesome guy too. They're actually sponsee brothers and they're both about 8 years sober.
Oh,
and everyone kind of wanted to go with that guy because he was cool and dressed cool muscles.
Oh, yeah. Got a nice little surface to him.
Right. But he's a good dude. He knows the book well and he's good recovery. But then I see this other dude and I'm like, he's kind of nerdy. Like, I don't know. I vibe with this guy. And so we're going to the park and, you know, I'm broken. But we start talking about literature and we like a lot of the same obscure writers.
Okay.
And he mentions this book, John Dies at the End. And I love that book and they made it into a really cool movie.
Oh, really?
And what's his name was in it? Paul Giamatti was in it.
Giamatti.
Yeah, it was great, cool. Yeah. So I say that because when he said that, I'm like, dude, you're not going to believe this. He's like, what? I'm like, I don't talk a lot about this, but like, or at least right now I'm a writer. Uh-huh. And I said, my next book is almost done. And the author of John Dies at the End, Jason Pargan's writing the foreword for it. And he says, shut the fuck up. Oh, I'm like, right? Shit. So anyways, it was in that moment. I'm like, this is my sponsor. And I asked him and he said, yeah. And so I know there's different schools of thought on going through the 12 steps and in different fellowships. And I think I've done pretty much all of them. I've written them in NA.
Yes.
I've done the slow burn in AA.
Yeah.
But this dude was like, Chris, you know, you've been in these rooms for almost 20 years. I actually, outside of NA, I'd only done up to the 10th step. And then I was never followed.
Oh, shit. So you never even completed them.
No. So that's part of what's different this time, you know? So while I was there the next 10 days, we went through 1 and 2. And then I had a 2-day window. I finally got into the Fellowship Center in Escondido.
Yeah, yeah.
I went there, but I had a 2-day window. So I ended up staying with one person I met for one night and then my sponsor the second night. And it was the 4th of July and we were going to Encinitas to the Self-Realization Garden, which I love it there.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Beautiful. And we were going to do the third step and make it really romantic and beautiful.
What a beautiful setting.
Yeah, but they were closed because it was the 4th. So there's a little area right up next to it, but still overlooking the water.
Oh, cool.
And I was chuckling to myself because there's planes flying by and they all have these banners on the back and their beer ads. And I'm like, fuck, 4th of July. Yeah, but I didn't have a desire. I found the humor in it. And, you know, he went all in. Like, he's like, dude, you're going to hold my hand now, and we're going to say the third step prayer in AA, which I'd memorized. And
yes.
There's people all around, and I'm like, fuck it, I am. I'm in for my recovery, and we did it, and we still laugh about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, over the course of those next 3 months while I was there, about 2.5, he would come down every other week, and we rocked through those steps, and we did not rush them. But, like, you're not really allowed to leave there until you get to a certain point, and even then it's to go to meetings. So I had a lot of free time and I wasn't, you know, I'm 45, like I'm going to be 46 this year.
Wow. You look great for your age.
Yeah, I moisturize. Thank you. I'm an 11 year old at heart, but
right.
Thank you. But yeah, so I worked diligently on those steps and he would come down from Oceanside every couple of weeks. And this dude knows his shit. Like I said, he's not only 8 years sober, but he works at a recovery center here in Ocean View and their dual diagnosis. He, you know, he knows what's up and he's a good dude. But he would come down and by the time I left, I finished the 12 steps and, yeah. But again, not like no bullshit. We really did them.
Yeah.
And I didn't finish my 9th step until actually my amends 10th step, excuse me.
Yes.
Until last week, with the exception of those amends I made financially.
Okay.
I'm broke as a joke right now.
You're willing to do it.
But yes, they are still on my list and they will get done this year. But,
yes.
But yeah, man. And here I am giving back. Like I was just at the First Step House today, volunteering for 4 hours.
That's
I'll be there tomorrow.
Awesome. I love that.
Yeah. It's run literally on volunteers and donations. It's incredible. Yeah. And that place saved my life. So, and Fellowship Center too, as much as I hated it there, You know, it helped. And then I went to Sober Living here in Oceanside, and it was paid for by McAllister in Oceanside.
Oh, okay.
Cool. So yeah, it was very cool of them. I was doing my groups, and then I found a job here in Vista, and I started making some money. And nothing against Sober Living, it served me well in the past. But you know, I was at the point where I'm like, I feel ready. And I talked to my sponsor and I talked to people in my network, and they're like, if you stay connected, And so I found a spot closer to work.
But we don't want you to live in Sober Living forever.
No, right, right, right. So, but you know, I'm still in touch with a bunch of people there, and most of them are still there, but that's great. Like, do what you got to do.
Do what you got to do, yeah.
Yeah, so I moved to a little kind of shitty room, but whatever, in Vista. It was in a trailer park with people over 55. Yes. Yeah, but
hell
it was like, it was a retirement trailer park. So it was,
That was a little nicer than,
it was a little nicer, but yeah, I mean, it was linoleum and the couple was nice, but like the guy I found out towards the end had cancer, and I would hear him throwing up because there was no soundproofing.
Yeah.
And that was tough too, because they had grandkids, which was super cool, but like, it was allowed in the environment I work in. So I work at this, it's a hybrid unit, which is, it was originally memory care, dementia and Alzheimer's.
Gotcha.
But now they do hospice and they do addiction. And they do self-harm.
Yeah.
They do suicide attempts. They do schizophrenia. I mean, if it's under the mental health umbrella, it's there.
Okay.
And so, you know, I work in that capacity, which is draining on every level, but my heart's in it.
Yeah.
But when I'm there and the screams, I mean, it sounds like a horror movie in there a lot of the time. But going home from
could be in your book.
it's going to be my next book. But, well, the trip is, man, like 2 years ago, I was on a psych hospital in a psych unit, not all that different from this one.
Okay.
And that to me, even though I had my falls, that speaks volumes to the 12 steps, regardless of what fellowship. If you show up and you do the steps, you are of service. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, man, there's nothing we can't do. So absolutely. Here I am, just over 8 months. And I know that's not a lot of time, but it is in a way too. Like, it's a solid 8 months of hard work.
Oh, fuck yeah,
and,
man.
And giving back. And yeah, so like I said, I go to the First Step House. I help people online that have questions. I provide resources. I just started doing, unrelated to recovery specifically, I do outreach down at Oceanside Pier with some friends that are in a church. And I'm not a church guy, but I met this dude, he has a Fugazi sticker on the back of his van.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, and he's in a priest outfit. And we start talking, and he's like, he marches down in Hillcrest at the Pride Parade and anoints people. So
really?
He's cool as shit. He's got this dope little church up here with a gnarly cemetery. And right around from the mission, the San Luis Rey mission.
Okay.
But yeah, so we've been doing outreach. And the cool thing about that is there's a lot of people unhoused down there that, of course, are struggling with addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I saw one of them a couple of days ago, and I was sitting on the blanket talking to him. And he's like, dude, you ever go to the First Step House? I'm like, yeah, usually every Thursday that I go with my sponsor to a meeting. He's like, I've seen you there. I was like, So I gave him my number. And it's like, I'm not just going there with them to donate or give socks and beanies. It's like, how can we help those who want to try to get out of that environment? And if they're happy, then that's cool too. No judgment. But a lot of people want to get out of it. So step one for many of them is the mental health thing, you know, getting them connected with detoxes, with First Step, with Interfaith, with McAllister.
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, but we're in the formative stages. And I'm not saying that to toot my own horn. I'm saying that because that shit keeps me sober too. You know, like, my friend Brian, who's the Episcopalian priest, said to me the first time we went, I don't go down there to minister. They minister to me, you know? Mm. And it's the same thing like when I go to the First Step House and I see that pain that's still very fresh in my heart. It's
fresh.
Like, without them saying anything, they're ministering to me, so to speak, as well. So
absolutely.
Yeah, man. So that's like where I'm at now. I'm here in North County and it's cool. And
fuck yeah.
I don't have a car, which sucks, but I will in July, you know? So
damn DUIs.
I know, man. But hey, you do the crime. I got to do the time. Luckily, I didn't get time. But yeah, that's a DUI. It's like 2 years old, but the system, it was in Orange County. But it was transferred to San Diego because I was moving down here.
Yeah.
I just started my classes like back in the fall, and they're on a break, and now they start again this Wednesday.
Okay.
And they'll be done in July, but this is a DUI that's 2 years ago.
Oh, no.
And that's I guess they had a place in San Marcos that closed. Okay. So anyone that's listening that is going through this, I'm sorry, you're not alone. It sucks. If you are listening and you're not going through it, don't get a DUI.
Don't get it.
don't kill anyone first and foremost, but if you don't and you don't hurt anyone else, like, yeah, dude, the mothers against drunk driving panel was brutal, but not, you know, I'm glad I did it. And that's the thing about this time in my recovery journey is that I'm, to the best of my willingness or awareness, I don't think there's really any stones I'm leaving unturned. Like in the past, I skated by, I did surface level shit.
Sure.
Just to feel like I was doing something. Yeah, and I'm not saying I'm 100% every day, because I'm not, dude.
Yeah, but no one really is.
No, right. But I show up each day for myself. And that way I can show up for other people. And it's fucking cool, man. Like, I actually like love myself today somewhat. And it's like, dude, I'm worth some good things, and it's a trip. It's cool.
Hell yeah.
It's
cool. I did want to bring up one thing.
Yeah, please.
Because it just kind of popped in my head as you were speaking earlier. So I've been starting this podcast for like a month, and I got all these wonderful guests, and including a new co-host. Cool. And so I had 12 people, and you are in episode 13, episode 13. Dude. Yes.
It's 13, Nick Marks, that's my number. This is perfect.
If you grew up in Chula Vista, it's a very universal number.
I actually heard, I have this ring I got in Connecticut because I just love 13. Like,
oh,
my goddaughter's birthday is February 13th, 2013. I have 13 Nicks, 13. But I heard out here, there's like, that's a gang thing. I'm like, dude, fuck the gang. This is a horror thing.
Yeah. We'll take it. Take it. Yeah. Take it from them.
I might get shot or stabbed, but whatever. Like, I'll hold it on fighting. But yeah.
Actually, so my sobriety date is March 5th, 2013. So
beautiful.
My tattoo right here, this hand is on the 3, this hand's on the 5.
Love it.
And 13, the year.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. That's what's up.
Yeah. That was a little, I waited 8 years to get this tattoo, by the way. So I wasn't jumping on that so quick.
I have a recovery tattoo, but no dates. I never got the dates because I knew better. But yeah, I have a couple of recovery tattoos. Yeah. So.
And, you know, it'll just be a random tattoo if I fuck up.
You got enough going around it that you can play that off.
Yeah. So anyways, where I was getting that too was, so I got, you know, 12 guests and I was popping all their podcast chairs, and you finally ended that streak.
Oh man.
And, you know, because, you yourself have a podcast.
Can
we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, it's called the Indie Spirituals Podcast.
Yeah.
And it's on, my spiritual teacher. His name's Ram Dass, and he passed away a few years ago, but a very important teacher in my life. Him and there's this other guy, Ken Wilber, who's in Colorado.
Yeah.
I call them my root teachers. I have plenty of other teachers too, but those are like my heart teachers. And so Ram Dass wrote this iconic book called Be Here Now that's sold millions and millions of copies. And it's just, it changed my life when I was first getting into recovery, actually.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily about recovery, but but it's a pretty important book for me and a lot of people. But so I think it was around 2000, or I don't know, early teens of 2000. I interviewed Ram Dass for a friend's website. He had one of his later books called Polishing the Mirror come out.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'd interviewed a lot of people up to that point. My first interview was with Brad Wilk of Rage Against the Machine when I was in high school.
Oh, nice, dude.
Oh, dude, I was doing a shitty zine, and I interviewed him at the back of a mom and pop video store I worked at. Because I learned he liked a band called Klickitatikatawi that I like too. They're this old, noisy, weird band. And, and I weaseled my way in there. And then the cool part was, it was their first album. But he invited me and some friends to come see them. They're on tour with the Jesus Lizard. And I love them too.
Cool.
So I went to Roseland.
Yeah.
That was my first interview. And then I started the website Indie Spiritualist. And that was crazy too, because I don't know how I was pulling this off, but I mean, I had Chino from Deftones. I had...
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Oh, dude, it's...
Huge fan.
Yeah, me too. Like Slug from Atmosphere, Immortal Technique, Henry Rollins, Ian McKay.
All my favorites.
It's fucking nuts. Cool. Danny Trejo, the actor.
Danny!
Yeah, Danny's like... I interviewed him at an Uno Pizzeria. him and George Romero, the director of Night of the Living Dead, I interviewed them in the same day.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. And they were both amazing. But Danny Trejo, we had 15 minutes. We ended up talking for like an hour and 15 minutes.
Oh yeah,
he has a son who's in like punk bands, and he would go on tour with them. Yeah, so we bonded.
Oh,
and he's also long term recovery. So
yeah, 50 something years.
Yeah,
something like that.
But that interview starts out. I put the recorder down and I say, you know, Danny, I know your time's valuable. I'm not going to ask you the same questions everyone else does. I want to make it worth your while. And he looks me dead in the eyes. He smiles. And, you know, Uno Pizzeria, they have like these little steak knives and shit. He takes it and he looks me in the eyes and he goes, "That's cool. And if I don't like them," and he makes a stabbing gesture. And then he laughs. And I'm like, dude, it's funny, but you're Danny Trejo.
Yeah. And, I mean, that would be kind of cool to get stabbed by Machete. Yeah, dude.
And it was right after Machete came out. Like, oh, here, no, you shit. Can see this is us right there. Like, he's got, wow. Look at this Machete embezzled. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's so fucking
he's
awesome.
He's so proud of his tattoo. That's the most.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That iconic.
Yeah.
Wildfire.
Yeah. But what a sweetheart, dude. So anyways, I'm just saying that because, like, that, I think, along with the interview I'd done with Ram Dass, lent itself to, I don't know, they were starting a podcast network. Yeah. Called the Be Here Now Network, and they knew how much I appreciated Ram Dass's work. And here's a cool little story too, because Be Here Now, Ram Dass, our guru, his name is Maharaji. And I want to be clear, I don't identify as any tradition. I just I'm in that lineage, but I'm just, I like the Dalai Lama says kindness is my religion. I'm down with that, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
I love
whatever
that.
You believe, that's cool. But like, if hate's in your heart and division, I don't know. I can't
be
fuck
nice.
With that. Yeah. I write about, there's a meme I saw of Moses, and I write about this in my first book, like a little thing. He's holding the two tablets, and one just says, "Be cool." And the other says, "Don't be an asshole." And that's like, those are my two commandments.
Ah,
you know? Like,
yes.
I try.
Yeah, yeah, the tombs, yeah, like just, those scriptures. Yeah, yeah, gotcha.
But so at the end of the interview, I'd wanted to ask him, because Indie Spirituals, my first book, was coming out, and Tony Hawk had written a cool endorsement for it, which was crazy.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And I had some other cool people like Alex and Allison Gray, who do the artwork for Tool. They've, again, I sound like I'm name dropping. I'm really not.
Yeah, I know.
This is what
I
do. Like, yeah, I teach at Cosm with them, and they've become good friends. And
that's awesome.
And that's what you were asking earlier. How do you end up getting these bigger names? I know that's where we're going.
Yeah. I remember.
It's just, I meet people, and then you meet more people. Like Bam Margera wrote an endorsement for my third book.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, and I only found that out because his brother, Jess, is the drummer for CKY.
Yeah.
Jess's wife, her name is Kelly, and she started following me on Instagram, and I guess she has a brother who, rest in peace, passed away to addiction.
Okay.
But she was telling me about her brother, and how she's like, yeah, Bam is a big fan of your first two books. And I was like, oh, that's rad. I grew up on CKY. Like,
right,
I love
right.
that shit, Jackass. And,
of course.
And she goes, yeah, actually, Tony Hawk gave him your first two books. Like, when he was in the battle. Yeah, I was
dude.
And so she gave me his info, and I reached out, and we were texting for a while. It was when he was sober for a little bit. I sent him, my publisher sent him a copy of Dead Set on Living before it came out. And I remember one night he was just texting me, underlining shit. I'm like, wow. Damn, this is cool.
Yeah, right.
But then he fucking, you know, fell off, and there was a time where
he landed in San Diego.
I know.
Eventually,
he was in Encinitas not too long ago. I've lost touch with him, but I think he's doing good again. But there was a really awkward night a few years ago when I was still in West Hartford. Now I was sober at the time, but he was on the phone with me, and he was a shit show. And he's like, "You gotta call Novak." And I'm like, "I don't know Novak. I know him from the videos.
Like, he's the homie.
Come on,
the homie."
But so he gives me Novak's number, and I'm like, "Fuck, I guess I'll call him." And I do. And I gotta say, Novak was cool as shit. He's a good dude, but he's like, "I can't talk to Bam right now." He's like, "I've given that dude every opportunity.
Of course,
if he wants to go to treatment, I have it set up, but
of course.
Yeah. And so I had to call Bam back, and whatever, you know, I hope Bam's good, man. It seems
like
he's doing all right.
Yeah, hopefully, man, hopefully.
But there was a story about Indies. Oh, my teacher. Anyways, that's beside it. I don't know. I will say it real quick because I think this is what did it was I wanted to ask him for an endorsement, but he had just had a stroke not that long ago. They had to have someone come in to help him finish the new book he's working on.
Uh-huh.
Nobody at the network knew I had a book coming out. Like, it hadn't really been announced yet.
Okay.
Like, I got some endorsements. But so he tells a story in Be Here Now about his mother. And he was outside in India on a pilgrimage before he met his guru, Maharaji. And he was going to the bathroom, and he thought of his mother, and he looked up the stars, and she had died of something to do with the spleen.
Yeah.
Anyways, he meets this guy a few days later. And he's Ram Dass is Buddhist at this point, and Maharaji's in the Hindu tradition. And, you know, Ram Dass was also, he was Timothy Leary at this point. Not Timothy Leary, Richard Alpert, but he was teaching with Timothy Leary.
Oh, I was like, that's a guy.
they taught together at Harvard, and they're famous because they got kicked out for conducting LSD experiments of course. Priests and shit. So that was them. So it was Richard Alpert. Then he meets this guy, Maharaji. And, you know, he's smart as shit. He's a smart guy. He's very well versed, and he's more into Buddhism.
Yeah.
And here's this dude, and people are crying, and he did feel something. But then he's like, what's the game here, man? Like, you know, this is a hustle, because he still has that East Coast or West Coast, you know, vibe. Of
gotcha.
Mentality. And the guy calls him over, and he says, last night under the stars. And Ram Dass is like, yeah, what? And he goes, think of your mom. And so he's like, oh, shit. And he goes, she died, spleen. There's no way that he could have known that, like none. And so Ram Dass talks about how he freaked out, and he goes through in his mind, like, the CIA's on to me. Like, what the fuck? How did they get this guy the info?
I would too.
Right. And so, you know, then I start to, like, hear more stories, not just from Ram Dass, but people I meet in this lineage. And I'm just like, all right, you know, I'm kind of jaded and skeptical, but, like, I also have an open mind. Anyways, go back to this interview, and it's at the end, and I was married at the time. And my wife was with me, and I introduced her to him because she loved his work too.
Yeah.
And as we're getting ready to go, he says, and you have a book coming out. And I was like, I was like, yeah. And he goes, okay. He's like, yeah. He goes, I want to offer it my Ashabad, my blessing, which is what Maharaji gave him for Be Here Now, which is huge.
Yeah.
And I start tearing up, and he goes, yeah, if you want to send it over, I'll write a blurb. I'll write an endorsement.
No way.
And I'm like, oh my God. And then he looks at me, and he looks up, and he goes, and that came through from the boss.
Whoa.
Yeah. I have chills right now just telling you.
Yeah.
Like, I have goosebumps.
Yeah.
And that's in that moment where I'm like, whoa, like, there's some real shit going on here. And trust me, if you're listening and you're like, yeah, bullshit, I don't argue. I don't blame you, dude. I'm not like into the new agey woo woo shit. And I don't, if you are, that's cool, man. But I, like I said, I'm still a bit skeptical and jaded a lot of things, but that shit and a lot of other things have happened.
Yeah.
But that's a long way of saying, I think once he got the book and read through it, you know, he's like, this could be a good younger voice. Cause I was one of the original nine, and the other ones were Ram Dass and Sharon Salzberg, who's an incredible Buddhist teacher, and Jack Kornfield and Krishna Dass and all these other people that are way more known than I am, written New York Times bestsellers and have been all over the news and, you know, just whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then me, I showed you the picture, you know, like this fucking dude.
Yes.
I think I was wearing an MF Doom t-shirt in that picture. And I was just like, what the fuck? But, so that was like 8 years ago. And it's just one cool guest after another. And that's the momentum, like how it picked up. And then certain people would tell me about their friends that might be interested. And also there were times I asked like people, hey, I know you know this person. Would you mind introducing? And if they're too busy, no worries. Worst a person can say is no, you know? And and that was a good exercise in for me to like really start putting myself out there. I mean, in my books, I lay it basically all out there. What I lack in prose, because I don't think I'm a very good writer. I'm an okay writer, but I love like Bukowski and Thompson and Wilk and like Anais Nin, and there are just these profound writers. And then there's me. What I lack though in prose, like I put it out there, but it's not just the mess. It's identifying, you know, like I've been through some shit. And who amongst us haven't? There's people out there that have been through a million times worse than I have. I know that. There are people out there who've been not nearly through the amount of shit I've been through. And I know that too.
Yeah.
But here, let me tell you some of what I have been without glorifying it, trying to laugh at it where I can.
Yeah.
But all in the spirit of like showing you some of the ways, like in time, I learned to avoid going back down these pitfalls, the hard way, but maybe you don't have to go through that. And, and shit, like I said, I still fell in a bunch. And, after
it happens, man,
it does. But with everyone, man, I was talking to somebody about this earlier at the first step house. They were beating themselves up over a relapse. And I said, you know, I've been there. I get it. I've done that. But I said, don't forget, man, I use myself as an example. I said, I came into these rooms, like I've already said, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I can't say I have 20 years sober, but I can tell you I have 20 years worth of wisdom and experience and knowledge. And, you know, I went to school for addiction counseling. That was cool to learn about the biology of addiction.
Oh, yeah.
Cool shit, you know,
Fascinating.
I wish all people in recovery had access to that. But What I learned that I think is most useful in the way I serve humans today is through my direct experience. You know, like diplomas are great and necessary for certain things, but like with those teens for those years, and this is the role I try to take now outside of my more formal job, is more a peer level. Like, I applaud degrees and they're, you know, great pay. I don't make great pay. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, hopefully I'll make more money with time in this book. You know, yeah. I don't feel like I need to struggle anymore. I did used to. I used to be very, have a lot of guilt around money. And
of course,
that's changing. But
yeah,
like just sharing from the heart.
Yeah, you know, like, dude, absolutely, man.
This is what I've been through. And so that's what I told the guy. It's like, you know, everything, no matter how long you have had sober, as we know, it's one day at a time, but those days accumulate for some of us in years, and that's awesome.
Yeah, it does.
But it doesn't mean if you slip and you lose that date that you lose everything you learned up to that point.
Of course not.
And and a lot of people forget that. I forgot that a lot. But today, I don't, you know, and it's like, and I still beat myself up. Like, 8 months was cool, but it was also like, fuck, dude, you've had years. And
yeah.
But like I said, not as strong of an experience as I have now. Yeah. So I'm cautiously optimistic every day that maybe I don't have to go down that road again. Maybe. But chances are better than not. Tomorrow, I'm not going to pick up because of what I did today. Yeah. So that's all I got, you know?
Hell yeah,
so,
man.
Yeah.
Well, man, thank you so much, man, for coming on here, man. Buddy. I really, really appreciate you, man.
Yeah.
You know, I know you're a little familiar with my journey.
Yeah, dude.
And I've gotten some long time sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could label it that.
Yeah.
But you know, I've had my ups and downs, and I always remember those mistakes that I had in my, I guess you could call it my early recovery, sure. Which would be me just fucking up and getting clean in and out. And, man, those were little seeds, man, that really have stayed inside me. And not every day is going to be perfect, you know, but I'm truly blessed, man. And, and I was able to somehow fucking create a podcast somewhere down the road. And, I really appreciate all the little gifts I have in my life, but it's only because I try to maintain it with a spiritual maintenance.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if that goes, then it's just a matter of time, you know.
Always. And, you know, Lewis, I want to say, like, thank you for the work that you do. Like, this is only, I think, the second time we've met in person.
Yeah.
We met, the first time at the Rational Satanic Recovery meeting, which, I love that fellowship, too. That's great. I met our friend Brittany there. She's awesome. But, you know, thank you for the work you do. And that's, like, how things like this happen. You know, for me, people ask, how did you get a book published, like, with Simon & Schuster? And how do you get these people, like you were asking? I came home. It was 2011. I was in treatment in New Jersey, and I was broken. And I came home. I had to move in with my parents, file for unemployment. I'd never done that. My car was repossessed. I missed my brother's wedding, where I was supposed to be his best man. It was bad. I was living in my brother's old room in my parents' house from high school. And the one thing I came home with was an honest surrender, a real surrender. Yeah. Like, you know, praying to whatever. I'm like, I don't know what you want me to do, but I will do it. I don't care what it is. Just show me, because my way does not work.
Yeah.
And so in the meantime of looking for work, I just started, for no reason, writing about my experience. I've never gone to school for writing to this day. I've never read a book about writing. Actually, I read Stephen King's On Writing.
Oh, okay.
But that's more about his journey than actual writing tips. Yeah. But that shit's crazy. He wrote Cujo, Blackout Drunk. Like, this dude.
Yeah. That's it's unfair to compare yourself to him.
Yeah,
it's like, what the fuck?
No, that dude's next level. But
next level.
But so I'm sharing that.
Also
because,
sober for a long time.
Yes, a long time. We were trying to get him to write the foreword for Necessary Death, but unfortunately it didn't work out. We got a second best, in my opinion. But I'm writing these articles just like vulnerably and with hope, and for unsolicited websites like Elephant Journal, Mind Body Green. I ended up hooking up and started writing for Huffington Post at some point too.
Wow.
Yeah, that was cool. And then it was a slow burn, but like then I was writing for magazines. I interviewed David Lynch once and
I love him.
Yeah. And we talked about him. He was amazing. We talked about meditation, and it got the cover of Origin magazine I was writing for. And in that same episode or issue, it was part one of part two interview I was doing with Chuck Palahniuk from Fight Club.
Yeah.
And I think that was what really pushed it over. And then I met, so somebody got in touch with me, and I was familiar with her work. And she's a 3 times bestselling New York Times bestseller. And
yeah.
She's like, I want to introduce you to my litter agent. And I'm like, I thought it was a joke at first because I'm unemployed living in my parents' house with nothing.
Yeah.
And she wasn't. And so I took that call and I made the mistake of looking who she represented. I shouldn't have done that. I got so nervous.
Whoa.
All New York Times best. I mean, like the dude, John Gray, I think, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Oh, okay.
Represents him, represents this woman, Gabrielle Bernstein. A lot of people know her. Like, I'm the polar opposite of these people.
Yeah. You
know? But this woman.
The indie guy, for sure.
Yeah, I guess. But this woman, I've been with her ever since 2011. I signed a contract with her for 2 years, and I never signed anything else. She's like my second mom. You know, we talk
at least
every few weeks, and it's 20 minutes about books, and then it's about life. And I'm saying this, man, because like I don't have any formal training, but I was showing up and doing the right thing like you're doing right now. And life starts showing up for you.
Yeah.
And dude, I signed that book. And like I said, now I have my 5th book coming out.
Fuck
and
yeah.
I've spoken. And here's the other thing that came with that was public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never taken a public speaking class. But like I mentioned, Silicon Valley, India Ari, Jewel, like so many mind-blowing people. Greg Louganis, I've spoken with him. Like, tons of inspiring people. And again, I really don't mean that ego. I'm saying that because if someone like myself that hasn't, I didn't actually finish my associates, by the way, for addiction counseling. So I still to this day only have my high school diploma. And I've been able, so, but look at what we've done, dude.
Like,
I mean, and at the end of it, I squandered some decent money I made through a relapse, but it's like I'm rebuilding my life again. And I'm paying way too much for a small room we're sitting in here in Oceanside, but I have a roof over my head, and I have a bathroom I can use. And, you know, I was thinking about this when I was with the unhoused the other day. I'm giving them food and stuff and shoes. And on the way back, I had to actually get a bottle of water and a protein bar because I didn't have food to eat here. Like, so I have a little more than them, but it's not lost on me that, like, that role could be reversed any day. They could be down there helping me, and it helps keep it green for me, too. You know, they're there, like, snorting lines, drinking, huffing. Also, you know how it goes. But I'm grateful that that shit, at least today, doesn't faze me. It reminds me of why I'm doing what I'm doing and you know, you're doing what you're doing. And so I bow to you, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Listening to this, if I haven't met you and you have 1 day sober, thank you. You're a testament. You know, keep it going.
Absolutely.
Know? So, yeah, thanks to your listeners, anybody that listened to this jibber jabber. But thank you, man. It's
all good,
honor,
brother. Thank you so much. So, what's the name of your upcoming book?
Oh, man, I don't know. It's gone through so
many. Oh, okay, still
here's,
that phase?
And here's the thing I've learned for any budding authors out there. Don't get attached to the name. You know,
like,
That's a battle. Like, Indie Spiritualist was cool. That one, that actually, well, that was originally going to be Watch It Burn. And that was based on this band, Cast Iron Hike, a hardcore band out of Boston I like. If you look at the chapters of my early books, most of them are, like, homages to like hardcore songs or hip hop songs.
Oh, and fuck yeah.
Yeah, like, and I use little epigraph quotes from like Converge and random obscure bands just to like show my love, man. So anyways, that's it.
All right, man.
Yeah, if anyone wants to connect, my books are everywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm on social medias and I actually respond to people.
Absolutely. So. And the podcast name one more time.
Oh yeah, that's the Indie Spirituals podcast. It's on the Be Here Now network. You can find the shows there or they're on Apple, Spotify, wherever, you know, it's all
cool, man. So, yeah. Check it out, everybody.
Thanks, dude.
All right, thank you, brother, so much. And I'm gonna do my second outro song.
Yes.
All righty, here you go. Goodbye, everybody.
Peace.